Welcome to another edition of Raising Sand Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, with a classic from Mali in West Africa called Nitirwe, or My Friend, to introduce this week's show as Raising Sand Radio makes news of its own. You, our listeners around the world, are invited to get involved and collaborate with Raising Sand Radio and to become more engaged with the new show format and the topics and subjects that we air. Our big news is that we are moving towards a more activist portal, using more innovative technologies and bringing more progressive views, voices, and ideas from around the world. For the last 3 years, Raising Sand Radio has aired an hour-long show each week from Stanford University. As of this week, we are no longer affiliated with Stanford University. We will miss that relationship, and we intend to continue the show as we have done regularly for the last 3 years. We will continue to invite progressive voices and share the voices and ideas that make a positive difference to our mutual future. We will add new features to the show that were not possible as a Stanford University program. One of our mandates is to make the connections between people, communities, cultures, and countries around the world and apply more of today's technologies to the show to increase our outreach and our life-affirming and people-centric message that really all of us share the planet and it is up to us to keep it healthy. As we make innovative connections with communities, people, ideas, and activities around the world, you can become more actively involved, and together we'll find ways of doing that. We begin today with a tribute to South Africa's Fatima Meer, one of the world's real heroines. It was said about Fatima Meer as she received her honorary degree from the University of Natal that she was, quote, among the first South Africans to have ever existed, a dutiful citizen before citizenship was enfranchised for her. We'll also hear from Dudu Khumalo, a water and rural lands activist in townships in and around Durban, South Africa. Dudu Khumalo is affiliated with the Center for Civil Society at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban, and she talks today about the struggles she wages to create simple, healthy, and dignified communities in post-apartheid South Africa. Then we'll hear from Annie Leonard talking about her new book and film, The Story of Stuff, with Stephen Colbert. Stay tuned. Fatima Meer died on March 13th at 81 years old after suffering a stroke earlier in that month. Meer suffered her first stroke 8 years ago that left her partially paralyzed, and this latest stroke caused additional damage to her nervous system, particularly the brain. Fatima Meer, a sociologist, is survived by two daughters, Shanaz and Shamim. During a lifelong campaign for the rights of the underclass, Meer published more than 40 books on the subject closest to her heart and has been acknowledged both locally and internationally with a slew of awards in recognition of her anti-apartheid work. Meer has been described as an exemplary Muslim who was constantly striving, even in her 80s, to improve the lot of her fellow people. As a political leader, academic publisher, writer, human rights and gender activists, and Gandhian, Fatima Meer's name resonates with the liberation struggle. Fatima Meer spent her life in the African National Congress and was a close friend and biographer of Nelson Mandela. But over the last decade or so, she began to question her allegiance to the ANC. In January 2000, she enraged ANC leaders by opposing the eviction of destitute families from council flats in Chatsworth, Durban. The ANC's objective was to sell off the council housing, and Meer helped to establish the Concerned Citizens Group, or the CCG, to organize protests against the ANC's anti-poor policies like privatization and cost recovery, which had led to violent evictions and water cutoffs. Then ANC Deputy Mayor of Durban, Trevor Bonham, called Meer a counter-revolutionary. Here she is.
You are just compounding their indigency. Then you move in with these security guards and dogs and guns. Now, if this is not fascist brutality, what is fascist brutality?
Well, nothing is fascist. I think, again, she's acting similar to a counter-revolutionary. And these counter-revolutionaries carry on and use that kind of language.
Well, if we find ourselves in a situation where the government of the day does not deliver and we demand that it delivers. And if we believe that the government of the day has the capacity to deliver, but still will not deliver, then we will inform people about it. And if that is being counter-revolutionary, we will be counter-revolutionary. Is revolution something absolute that belongs to a certain party or to a certain people for all times? The ANC was a revolutionary party, and I am known as one of those who was foremost in that revolution. We have to be in a process of revolution all the time if we are going to progress and if we are going to guarantee the rights of our people. Once a party comes into power and forgets what its revolutionary platform was, then surely another party will replace it and continue the revolution and the revolutionary struggle, which is, after all, for human rights, for democracy, for equality.
This is peacetime now, where they stand on the outside and throw stones. We do that in the real apartheid days, through outside, we used to stones, but they do it now in the peacetime. So they want to be peacetime heroes. Good luck to them.
There is no peacetime so long as there is poverty and hunger, and so long as people's basic human rights are trod upon. We are living in a society which is rampant with crime, and we all know that the cause of crime is the inequality that prevails in our society. We in South Africa are the second most unequal society in the world today, preceded only by Brazil. We have enormous poverty. More than half our population lives in abject poverty, and the rural population, about 72% of those living in rural areas, live in poverty. Can you call that as living in peace? What is the definition of peace? The definition of peace is that we should be living in equity, we should be living in harmony, we should not be living in conditions of starvation and homelessness.
It's being used that we're evicting destitute poor people. It's not true. It's a dishonest campaign. And I regard the CCD as Johnny come lately, people who dive in the bag when trying to make a name for themselves. They're not going through the trenches of struggle that we went through to make a name for ourselves. The name we made for ourselves, we didn't earn it on the backs of anyone. We earned it through sheer sweat and blood and tears. They're not going that route. They've lived in the silvery ivory tower for many years, but they seem to want to make an issue of these people, because they discovered there is a poor sector, there's a destitute sector, and there is a sector that who had no leadership. So they're giving them the false leadership. So I got no respect for CCG.
Does the politician who talks about Johnny came lately onto the poverty scene, and obviously that implies that they were always there on that poverty scene, so why didn't they do something about it? Why did they lose the support of their own party in an important constituency by ignoring their problems? We came late, we acknowledge, but then that means that they were there ahead of us. Why did they lose their party support and did not lift a finger to help these destitute people? I've not wanted to come into any kind of confrontation with the ANC. And I have written numerous letters, and I have made numerous phone calls, and I have tried to set up a meeting to try and bring about some kind of healing between the ANC and the people who have become disaffected with them, that is, the Indian minority. The indications are very strong that they are not going to support the ANC. But I find that they've also become somewhat disenchanted as they have become more aware of their own rights. They have also become disenchanted with the National Party and the Democratic Party. And I'm speaking now specifically of the Indian people living in Chatsworth.
But we want our...
In fact, I think they have become totally disaffected from all politicians. They feel that politicians can't do anything for them. We have set up now 5 residence associations in Chatsworth. And there is a feeling, very strong feeling, among these residence associations that they would like to run their own independent candidates. And the CCG will certainly help them to its best ability. They'd be standing for the rights of the poor people. They would be standing for their right to housing, their right to water, their right to electricity, their right to work, their right to jobs, their right to proper health facilities. In Chatsworth, these communities, the children don't have any play lots. I found the children sitting on the double beds, and I said, why aren't they at school? And the mother said, I haven't got the school fees. So the right to education is also involved here. I don't owe allegiance to a party. If a party does not deliver, I'm going to criticize that party. And that is my stand. I've always stood for the poor and for the rights of the poor, and I'm standing now again for the poor and for the rights of the poor. And if this is standing against the ANC, then I will be standing against the ANC. Though I must point out to you that all my friends are there. You know, all my socialization, my allegiances, my sort of happiness, my camaraderie, my comradeship for the last, 60 years or so has been there. But if it comes to a situation where I have to move out of this because of the needs of the people, the vast majority of South Africa's citizens, then I have to unhappily and unfortunately move out of that groove into another one.
Thanks to Vukani Films for this clip.
All day I faced a barren waste without the taste of water, cool water. Old Dan and I, with throats burnt dry and souls that cry for water.
That's a classic with Burl Ives called Cool Water to introduce our next segment. Dudu Kamalo is a water and rural lands activist in townships in and around Durban. Today, Dudu Kamalo talks about the struggle she wages to create simple, healthy, and dignified communities in post-apartheid South Africa. Dudu begins talking here about the Umgeni River and the role it played in rural communities before the Ananda Dam was constructed. At the time, the Ananda Dam was seen by the wider community as a lifesaver of sorts, as dams often are if one is promised easy access to cheap water. What was not focused on much at all at the time were the traditional land communities that would be forced to move as the water rose behind the dam wall. Here is Dudu Kamalo.
The whole three communities used to use the river, Umgeni River, as their main source of water, and we were very happy with Umgeni River. As much as during the apartheid years, we had standpipes and along the roads, and especially near the schools, where if the Umgeni River is full, we will then use the standpipes as our source of water. But we loved our river because there are many things that is done by the communities on river using the river water. And after the dam was constructed and people were removed in their areas and they lost their land, and in all three parts of the rural areas, which is Mapepeteni, Makadini, and Wangolosi, people were forcibly removed to the other. I always call them dry areas because they did not have enough land there. They did not have what sufficient water as they used to have, because part of Kwangolosi people were moved above the mountain in a dry area which is called Molweni, and it was called Dinabakubo place, and there were tin houses that were kept there for those people who were moved from Kwangolosi.
About how many people were moved?
In Kwangolosi, about 300 families were removed.
So about 1,000 people?
Yes, 300 in Kwangolosi. And Makadini also, it's about plus minus 400 people also on the other part of Umgeni River. And Mapepeteni, which is better far, but Umgeni still ran along those three communities. They were also removed. And the Kati people were removed from Kati to into Zuma in a G section. And they were also given tin houses with no sanitation and no running water there. Although the G section of Induzuma is a township where the infrastructure is good, they have flush toilets and the tap running water. But these people were kept there with no proper sanitation and no water. And those people who were left in Kwangolosi and Makadini, some were asked to move and get some land within the community where they can be able to build their other new houses over there. And surprisingly, we were also told that we should reduce the livestock that we had. Remember, in African people, when you have land and the livestock, you are a wealthy person, even if you don't have a cent or you don't even have a bank account. But we lost all that because we were told that each family should at least have 3 cows and not more than 5 goats and something like that. And even people did not like to do that, but they were forced because the decision was made on these higher structures, which is Inkosi and Induna's. Decisions was taken by them, and people were then removed away of their land.
Just a quick clarification here. Dudu Kumalo refers to decisions made by the Inkosi and the Induna. This is the traditional structure of the Zulu. Under the king, the top-down structure consists of the Inkosi, and then under the Inkosis are the Indunas or clan heads, and then the heads of families, always male. In this case, the Inkosi and Indunas agreed to the changes that would come with damming of the Umgeni River, and the families under the Indunas had to abide by the decision.
We're told that by building the dam will be able to give more water to another surrounding areas of Etewini municipality, which that the townships will have enough water and other areas. But we found ourselves with no water. And I'm saying this because the dam is just behind us, but we do not have proper sanitation. And years later, after 1994, in all these three communities, we were given the UD toilets, which is urine diversion toilets. We thought they were proper toilets because we didn't know anything about these names of the toilets, and we thought that is something that is going to be good for the people. But as years gone by, it was found that no, it was not a good thing to have those toilets, and we ended up going back to our own traditional toilets.
What was the issue with the UD toilets?
The issue with the UD toilets is that they have shallow pits, unlike our traditional toilets, because in our traditional toilets, we used to dig like 6-meter pit because we would allow to want to have a space of using the toilet longer than what the UD toilets are now having. At the same time, the UD toilets, the way they are made is that they have these two pits, and these pits are very shallow. After the first pit is full, then you have to take this bucket, like seat, remove it from this other pit, put it to the other pit, and wait for this feces to dry, and then take that one out. And the idea or the communication with the people was that they will take all the shit and put it in the garden. And just imagine the heat that is in KwaZulu-Natal. Will that dry? No, it did not dry. Mm. And it started smelling. Mm. And it was not very good to use the toilets. And especially I, at home where I was born, we never used the toilet because I suspected, because in these pits it's cemented and the nature won't do what our traditional toilets are doing. Pathogens that is, yes, helping whatever is there to dry out. But in this case, it doesn't dry because it is cemented. Mm. And the idea with the municipality was that we are going to use ashes and soil to cover after you have used. And this bucket, the way it is built, is that the urine has to go somewhere and the feces has to go somewhere. It won't have to be mixed so that it dries quicker, but that doesn't happen. And men use something that is stuck on the wall if they want to take their urine out. And you know that is very much discriminative to us.
This is Raising Sand Radio, and I'm Susan Gallimore with a pre-recorded presentation with Dudu Kumalo, a water and rural lands activist in townships in and around Durban, South Africa. Kumalo describes the issues associated with moving traditional Zulu communities when the Inanda Dam was constructed. Along with the move from traditional lands came many promises, as well as some actual housing construction. Kumalo here describes one major change, that of replacing traditional toilets with UD, or urine diversion toilets. What did the local municipalities do once the local people reported that these new toilets were a giant step backwards? Particularly so as the increased workload fell upon women already struggling to keep their family going.
We tried calling the municipality to come to rescue us, because the promise was that after 5 years they will come back and draw whatever is there. And when people talk about, are we going to be removing this, and it is said by the municipality, yes, we have supplied you with the toilets and now we can't do everything. Do it yourself. Mm-hmm. We said we don't mind doing it. At the end of the day, it will be somebody else's job. And who is always at home are the women. And they will have to do the job. Okay, it's fine. But okay, give us the training on how to do all this. And it was said that the training was given because there were community development workers who are there, but nothing has happened. And everybody denies that they have seen people being trained. When the municipality came, unfortunately, I was not in that meeting when we called the municipal officials to come in. And they said, the report was that people were very happy about the toilets. But when we met with the community again, they said, no, we never said that. Then it was just a fight between me and one of the municipal officials. And later we have realized that what they do, I remember one day we went with other community members from different areas to one house where we were going to be shown this, how does this UD toilet work. And when Olin started asking questions, and it was not liked by the municipal officials, this toilet was very clean and you could see that it has never been used. And they are using their own traditional toilet, which was in a very good state also. One of the municipal officials wanted us to see the gas, how the gas is made out of, yes.
Oh, the methane?
Yes, out of the shit that we are taking out. Some of the members that we had in the community, you know, it was like blinding people that these toilets are very good, they are usable, you have to use toilet paper, not newspaper, all this yara yara stuff. We kept on fighting, and towards the end of last year, we were told that they will come to Umzinyathi because they can see that the people of Umzinyathi want to be upgraded. They want all this what other people in the townships and in the urban areas are having. We are now going to have flush toilets and stand pipes. And mind you, this is not told to the community meeting, but it's told to the individuals who are usually talking. Again, the communities are not consulted, because what we are always saying is that get the meetings, talk to the people, give them suggestions, let them give their own suggestions, but that doesn't happen. What happens is that we usually get the ideas from them and then we have to take those. It doesn't work, and they know that it doesn't work, but one official has commented and said that if we are going to waste time by consulting, we are never going to do things with the group, because there are those that are going to say that, no, I don't want this. I said, yes, you are supposed to do that, because now you are saying you are going to give us a full pressure or whatever. We have to choose between these kinds of water that is flow restriction, full pressure or whatever. There are those who won't be able to afford. And right now we still have people who does not have water tanks in their yards because they can't afford the 400 rands that you have to pay in the municipal office before you get the water tank. And people end up sharing water. We don't mind sharing. We've been sharing since I was born. And even now we don't mind sharing. Yet we are always called that we are water wasters, you know, which is very sad.
Now, water quality tests have shown that the Mgeni River has very high levels of mercury contamination. In the late 1980s, it was shown that a British transplanted mercury reprocessing plant, Thor Chemicals, was responsible for some of this contamination. This history is a whole nother show, but I asked Dudu Kumalo about the state of mercury contamination in the Mgeni River and Ananda Dam now.
That is still the case, but it is kept under the carpets because Mgeni River, which is the bulk supply of water to the Etowin municipality, kept on denying the research that was done by MRC, Medical Research Council. When we were told about the mercury, communities were told through the radios that they mustn't eat the vegetables that are...
They were told that.
Yeah, they mustn't water their gardens with the Inanda Dam. But yeah, you can't just work and then don't eat your food at the end of the day.
You gotta get your water from somewhere too, right? They weren't trucking water in?
No, they weren't. We all depend on this tank water, which is 6 kiloliters per month. Up until now, we don't know what is really happening because people went on and used their gardens and ate whatever they got from there. And they are still going to Inanda Dam to do their washing and bathe. And recently what has happened is that there was this kind of chemical. I haven't found the name as yet because the woman that was given that a small tender keep on hiding from me. And she was asked to look for youth that is looking for jobs, and they went there and they were supposed to put this chemical in the dam, and some of them ended up with the frightening rash in their bodies. They were very sick, and when they went to the clinic they were advised by the nurses to go and sue the woman because they don't know the damage that is done by this chemical to in their bodies. But we are still trying to work on that.
And the chemical was what, to prevent mosquitoes, or what was it supposed to do?
Something like that. But it was not even explained to them or trained by the how to use the chemical. So when this project of UD started, at the beginning, it was that each family should dig two pits. One pit will act as a septic tank and one pit will be, you know. But after 3 months, they were told again to cover those pits because the municipality has come up with this new system, which is UD. The UD that is not helping even today. And it is not friendly at all, especially to the elderly people, because you have to at least go two steps to the toilet because it is high up. You know, the structure of the toilet is fine, but the inside part, that is questionable.
Yeah. As we wrap up our segment with Dudu Kumalo, I know there's a lot of talk about redistributing land to communities that lost everything when the dam water rose. We will bring you listeners more about this in a future show. Meanwhile, where does Khumalo's work go from here?
Right now, we are, as the committee, we are trying to involve the councillor in making sure that we keep the river that we have, especially the Umzinyathi River. And we are trying to involve her. She is very, if I may say, stubborn, because she always says that she is the one who has to call the meetings, not us calling the meetings for her. But okay, in this case, I think she's going to be okay, because we are taking this upon us, that we would like the municipality to help us into making sure that the river stays clean. Like, sometimes you'll find that taxis are in the river washing their taxis while other people down the stream are busy using that water for their own washing. And we want to remove all these alien trees so that we can see it can become a good river again. And we are still organizing on that as well. We are organizing youth because we always want youth to see the importance of our natural resources. And with the land, there are lots of things, because at the present moment, we are trying to convince Inkosi, as he is also trying to convince us, to use the land that we still have, because people have become lazy. They don't do the work that we usually did when I grew up, where you'll find that there is a big space where we are planting the millets and beans and other stuff. People are just doing the small gardens in front of their homes. And this is going to be affecting us, because there is this municipality is going to be building houses in our rural area. And myself and others don't like that, because we have seen the houses that are being built by government for the people. They are very small. And in the rural areas, we still have a bit of the land. And if that land is taken away from you, what are you going to have? Mm-hmm. You won't have anything, because that will belong to the municipality. And the chief is convincing us to use as much land as we can through gardening and other stuff, so that the municipality can't get the land to do these houses. And what we are saying is that we know that there are very poor people who need these good houses, but at the end of the day, they will get these small houses and they'll be left with small land, and the other piece of land will be taken away.
That was Dudu Khumalo, a water and land activist in townships in and around Durban, South Africa.
Can't you see that big green tree where the water's running free, and it's waiting there for me and you?
The issues discussed in today's show echo in many other parts of the world. If you're involved in a community involved in similar issues, contact me, Susan at Raising Sand Radio, and let us begin to make global connections and networks to understand the forces at work here. What do we in the United States have in common with Dudu Khumalo's community and work in South Africa, or similar issues in Brazil, or in Haiti, or even in West Virginia? How can ordinary people make a difference, and how can we join together in this vital work? As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, for the time being, Raising Sand Radio is liberated from the brick and mortar of Stanford University's physical studio, and we're branching out in new directions while we also continue to bring progressive ideas and voices as we have aired for the last 3 years. If you like what we do, get involved with us. We are also now listener-sponsored, and if you want to become a sponsor, visit our website, raisingsandradio.org, to learn more about how to do that. Let's move on now to the last segment of today's show, and it's about the story of stuff. Annie Leonard is the author and host of The Story of Stuff, and is just beginning a book version of the film also called The Story of Stuff. Annie Leonard spent nearly 2 decades investigating and organizing on environmental health and justice issues. She has traveled to 40 countries, visiting literally hundreds of factories where our stuff is made and dumps where our stuff is dumped when we're finished using it. Witnessing firsthand the horrendous impacts of both over and under consumption around the world, Annie is fiercely dedicated to reclaiming and transforming our industrial and economic systems so they serve rather than undermine ecological sustainability and social equity. Here is a clip of Annie Leonard talking with Stephen Colbert.
My guest tonight believes Americans have too much stuff. But how else are we supposed to fill up our too much house? Please welcome Annie Leonard. Ms. Leonard, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Now, young lady, you are the author of a book called The Story of Stuff.
Yep, just out today.
Just out today, and it's in support and related to a very popular film that you have up on the internet. It's a craze called The Story of Stuff. And I believe we have a clip right now. Jim, show them what we're talking about.
Some analysts say we have less leisure time than any time since feudal society. And do you know what the two main activities are that we do with the scant leisure time we have? Watch TV and shop. In the U.S., we spend 3 to 4 times as many hours shopping as our counterparts in Europe do. So we're in this ridiculous situation where we go to work, maybe 2 jobs even, and we come home and we're exhausted, so we plop down on our new couch and watch TV, and the commercials tell us you suck, so you gotta go to the mall to buy something to feel better, and then you gotta go to work more to pay for the stuff you just bought, so you come home and you're more tired, so you sit down and you watch more TV, and it tells you to go to the mall again, and we're on this crazy work, watch, spend treadmill, and we could just stop.
Wow. But we could stop. But why would we want to? Because right now, we're winning.
We're winning in what? The collection
you
of more
stuff?
You
said we're beating the Europeans on how much we shop and spend, right?
Well, you know, we used to own our stuff, and now our stuff owns us. Stuff has taken the place of...
That's kind of an easy thing to say, but what does that mean, our stuff owns us?
What that means is we're making such a priority about getting and keeping and maintaining and fixing and putting back... on the shelves and untangling the cords and all the
absolutely
stuff that we have to
getting
do
getting and
stuff.
Spending, I increase my powers.
Right. It's at a great personal cost. Our quest for more stuff and then the work you have to do to maintain it is taking the place of things that provide deeper happiness. Things like leisure time, time with family, having a sense of purpose beyond yourself, the quality of your social relations. Study after study shows that the things that really makes people happy is not that new flat screen TV, but it's having a sense of community and a sense of purpose.
No,
but
no,
we're so busy shopping.
Let's make some friends for you right now. You must think this economic downturn is fantastic then, because people have less money to go, you know, spend things. They have to be with their families. They have to entertain themselves with conversation and stuff like that. You must be going, yee, let's have a depression. Is that what you're saying?
I'm excited about the potential of this economic downturn to get us to think a little more critically and a little more strategically about where we spend our dollars. When there's less dollars to spend, we got to think about, is it really worth that extra job working that weekend to get this new car or our 15th pair of shoes or our 32nd t-shirt? Is it really worth the toll on our personal lives as well as the toll on the planet to just keep consuming more stuff?
You say that stuff has a secret life. What do you mean by that? Are you saying that my beanbag chair is gay? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, all of the stuff in our lives has a life before it comes to us and a life after us. And I actually got so curious that I spent 10 years traveling the world looking at the factories where our stuff is made and the dumps where our stuff is dumped. And I saw that all along the way, there are huge hidden environmental, social, and health costs that are often out of sight and out of mind. But the good news
is... What did you discover? My understanding is that it comes from China and it goes, I don't care.
It goes back to China, unfortunately.
Oh, does it really?
It goes back to China often,
so
or
it's
Africa.
The circle of life. It's perfect. It's like a water cycle.
The problem is that the production causes a lot of environmental and health problems, and the disposal causes a lot of environmental and health problems. So it's not really fair to shunt the dangers of producing it and disposing it overseas while we get the very short benefit of using it. It's just not fair.
Now, I hate to point this out, but this book is stuff.
It is.
And what if someone were to throw it away, what would happen to it?
Well, you would compost it because it's 100% paper and it's non-metal. It's soy-based ink and there's no solvents in the glue, so it'd be totally easy to compost. But I hope somebody won't throw it away. You could donate it to your library. You could share it with your neighbor. There's a lot of things to do with it. You could
compost this. This could actually become an ear of corn.
It could, but let me tell you, I am not against stuff. The fact that this is stuff is not bad. I'm actually for stuff.
Good, because I was afraid you were going to take away my stuff.
No, I want us to have greater reverence and appreciation for our stuff. Instead of this just mindless buying and chucking all the time, I want us to look at our stuff and think, someone made this, someone mined those metals, someone felled that forest or you know, produced those crops or fished in the ocean or whatever they had to do to get that stuff. Someone brought it to us. Let's have a little more appreciation and reverence for the stuff we have instead of this mindless consumerism all the time.
Congratulations on the success of the film. Over 10 million people have seen it.
Yeah.
Have you thought about putting out like plastic action figures to go along with it?
We get a lot of requests for that from people who I don't think have actually watched the film. So what I encourage them and all your viewers to do is actually watch the film, The Story of Stuff.
All right, The Story of Stuff, Annie Leonard, a book of the same name, appearing today. Buy it. Don't throw it away. Thank you so much.
Annie invites you to download, duplicate, and share the film for non-commercial use as much as you would like under the Creative Commons copyright. Go to the website, www.storyofstuff.org, and follow the instructions to download. You're listening to Raising San Radio, and this is the first of our new show format, this one using more of today's media technologies, and we'd like you to get more involved and collaborate more directly with us. As you may know, the show is 3 years old now, and we've produced a variety of shows with diverse progressive topics. You can go to our website, raisingsandradio.org, and download any of our shows, and it's also for free. I'm Susan Gallimore, host of this weekly hour-long show airing progressive ideas, and today we're laying the groundwork for future work in this arena. Please join us and think about becoming a sponsor of our show. In order to learn more, go to the website, raisingsandradio.org. Tune in again next week for more Raising Sand Radio. Meanwhile, as I say, go to our website, Raising Sand Radio, to listen to any of our other shows that you can download at your convenience. You can also email me at susan@raisingsandradio.org to comment on any of our shows and suggest topics for future shows. You can also get more involved. You can send perhaps clips of similar topics going on in your neighborhood, and we can see if we can find a place to air those according to our show mandate. If you want to become a sponsor of the show, drop me an email at susan@raisingsandradio.org. We may never rival Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, but we share those values, and we here at Raising Sand Radio believe that together, each of us in our own creative way can make a difference in the direction our planet moves in now. It's up to us, you and me, and the Dudu Kamalos, and the Fatima Mears, and the Annie Leonards, as shared here today, to join together in common purpose and insist on the primacy of people over profit, and that a healthy Earth is not only possible, but it is a necessity. We'll end today's show with music from Bash the Trash, a group of artists and educators using the arts to encourage environmental awareness. All the musical instruments you hear here are built from trash. Go to www.bashthetrash.com to learn more, and tune in again next week. Thank you.